The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So what I thought of talking about this evening is working with variations of fear, of anxiety, of worry. This seems to be a kind of a state of mind that's very common for us in this culture. So I just like to explore this a little bit. How to work with this? How to allow that too? How can we work with the experience of fear in our meditation so that actually when fear arises, much as if, you know, a sound arises or a body sensation arises, if fear arises, that's an equally valid experience to cultivate our mindfulness on. We don't actually have to have a combative relationship with that either, or with any emotion. But tonight I'm going to kind of emphasize or explore working with fear. So, you know, fear has so many different flavors to it. And the first kind that I want to address just right off or just mention right off is a kind of a primal fear that can come if we are in an immediate life-threatening situation. That kind of fear, at least in my own experience, the few times I've been in immediate life-threatening situations, actually serves to heighten awareness. You know, I come right into the present moment. I walk up and step nearly on a rattlesnake, and there's the snake rattling at me like 2 feet away. And it's like, phew, there's fear, but there's also immediate presence. And, you know, if you cannot be afraid of that fear, you know, it actually serves you. When I saw that happen, it was like, I just watched my body do its thing, which was to slowly back up. So, you know, it seemed to be helpful, that kind of sense of immediacy of coming into the present moment in a life-threatening situation. So that's not the kind of fear I'm going to talk about tonight. Mostly the kind of fear I'm going to talk about is what we could call maybe constructed fear, or fear that comes around projecting into the future, ideas into the future of, it's going to be like that and I don't want it that way, or I'm afraid it's going to be like that, and what's going to happen if it's like that, and what are people going to think of me, and how am I going to you know, do this or that. You know, that can move into fear, anxiety, worry. That's the more the kind of fear I'd like to talk about in the talk today. So first I'd like to, you know, in terms of thinking about kind of three main kinds of fear here, just, there's many, many kinds of fear. I mean, we could name others: terror, dread, anxiety, worry. So I'd like to just distinguish a little bit between some of those flavors. I actually looked them up in the dictionary to get some clarity for myself about what those words mean. And the definition of fear is connected with some sense of some kind of danger, perceived danger, let's say, as opposed to the actual immediate danger. You know, you're not in the situation of a tiger is sitting in front of you. It's a thought about a tiger sitting in front of you, or whatever your tiger is. So there's some thought about a fearful situation, and fear arises. So the fear arises when we think about something threatening. It can arise if we think about something threatening. And that's an interesting thing to recognize. You know, that if just a thought comes into our mind, you know, we're minding our own business, walking down the street, and some thought pops into our mind about, well, what if this happens? Whew. And the fear appears. So this is an interesting thing to notice, that fear can arise based on thought. Usually some kind of thought about the future. Anxiety tends to have a a disturbance that tends to be around uncertainty in the future, as opposed to a kind of a sense of I know or I'm afraid of this specific thing happening. Anxiety tends to be more about unknown or about things being uncertain. I also find anxiety can arise around, overwhelm or a feeling of way too much to do. It's that the feeling of anxiety can come, but I see it's kind of related to a sense of how are people going to perceive me if I don't get all of this stuff done? You know, so that it's related to having too much to do or something like that, but that it comes back to a sense of how will others perceive me or something like that. But I often find that anxiety is related to some kind of uncertainty. You know, you're not sure about what's going to happen. Then the definition of worry in the dictionary said it includes excessive pondering, excessive thinking. So the mind spinning. Worry includes a lot of thought spinning in the mind. Fear, I think, there may be a thought that arises that creates the fear, but the fear itself can feel more, is more in the body, a feeling of, there's an emotional sense or there's a mind-body connection, but it's kind of it doesn't have to be about thought. Fear can be felt. Worry tends to have much more thinking associated with it. But in all of these cases, they seem to be related to something about the future, something about what's going to happen in the future. And this is something that, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, you know, how the arising of some idea in the mind, you know, we can be walking down the street happily, spending our day with a friend, and then suddenly a thought pops into our mind, and fear would arise. So the interesting thing to recognize is just how much our emotions, and in particular fears, are constructed based on what's happening in our mind. So this is, when we think about what the future actually is, you know, the future, we envision or believe, in effect, when that thought pops into our mind about something happening in the future, there's a way in which we believe that thought to have some reality, which is, in a way is why the fear comes. So this is, you know, in our meditation, in our mindfulness practice, we can begin to recognize that arising a thought and how so many of our fears, anxieties, worries are related to just something our mind is doing. There's a kind of a classic story, I think it's from the Zen tradition, about a monk who's in a cave and he's painting a picture of a tiger. And he's right up close to it and he's painting the picture of the tiger, and at some point he takes a step back and looks at the picture. And he gets frightened because the tiger he's painted is so real, he believes the reality of the tiger and he goes running out of the cave because he's believed his creation to be real. This is what happens in our minds. Thoughts come into our mind and in a sense, we believe them to have a reality. We don't recognize them just as, oh, this is a thought happening in the present moment. A thought in the present moment is happening about something that might happen in the future. We don't experience it that way. We experience it as something that is kind of immediate in the present moment, like that tiger becomes immediate in the present moment in the cave. So often fear, worry, anxiety results from some kind of thought coming into the mind. the anxiety, the worry, and fear also can tend to be perpetuated by leaping onto those thoughts and thinking about them more. You know, so we kind of get into a cycle. So, you know, that example, walking down the street where you're happily having a conversation with a friend and the thought appears in your mind. What often happens in that kind of a situation is it's not just the appearance of a thought in the mind that appears and disappears and we go on with our conversation with our friend. We have that thought and then we start thinking more thoughts about that situation. There's a term in the Pali that called papancha, which is essentially excessive proliferation or mental spreading, mental conceptual proliferation. Essentially, that's what happens in our minds. It thinks a thought, and then it proliferates on it. And that proliferation, then we react to even more. And so there becomes this cycle of feeding the emotion of fear, anxiety, worry. So that's much of the process of how this emotion happens for us. So that actually indicates one way to work with it, which is a good way to work with fear is to see if you can feel it in the body, because it does have a bodily component. Fear has a really strong, actually, if you can connect with it. Often it's in the stomach or in the throat. There's a clenching in the throat or a kind of a tightening in the stomach or a feeling of agitation in the stomach. So if you can connect to the feeling in the body and recognize, oh, okay, there's tightness in the throat, there's agitation in the stomach, that helps to cut, if you can ground your attention in that, it helps to cut the mind's attachment to thought and the cycle of the thought that's feeding the spiral, the deepening spiral into fear. So that's one really helpful way, especially if you're seeing a lot of thoughts around a pattern of fear or worry or anxiety, see if you can ground your attention in the body and consciously let go of thoughts whenever you find yourself pulled back. But what if? But what if? But what if? Oh, what is it like now? What is it like? What's happening here? Those are thoughts. What's happening here? But what if? Oh, that's just a thought. What's happening here? So to keep coming back to what's actually happening in the present moment really can help to cut the cycle or the spiral of fear. But fear can also result not just from thought, but almost from kind of conditioned patterns. So, for instance, I could think I've come up with something, you know, suppose you've had some kind of an accident. So you've been in some situation, maybe in a car, and it happened that, you know, a truck crossed in front of you and was too close and you hit the truck or something like that. So that condition there, if that condition, I mean, if even close to that condition is repeated, if you're driving down the freeway and a truck drives up next to you, fear might arise because of the similarity of the situation. That it's almost like the body-mind gets conditioned to certain emotions pretty quickly. Or if you've had some kind of trauma as in some kind of situation. I mean, you hear stories about people who've been in war situations, and then if they're at home, the sound of the helicopter will re-trigger the sense of fear. And there's probably a little bit of thinking happening there, but I think largely it's that there's kind of been a direct sense wiring almost because of a traumatic situation. So sometimes it's not so much about thought, it's about certain conditions that re-arise. You know, if you've been abused by somebody who has a certain body shape, if you see somebody with that body shape, there might be some fear just because of the conditioning around that. So how do we respond to fear? For me, I think my first response, my immediate response is, how can I fix this situation? How can I get control of this situation? You know, that's usually my first thing is, okay, here's a problem. How do I fix it? How do I control it? I also find with fear there can be, if it's not something immediate happening, but there's a sense that might happen in the future, my mind will also do a kind of a proliferating projection of, well, how many different ways can I think of how to avoid that thing that might happen? So, you know, it's like, well, what if that happens? Or what if that's the path things take? What if that's the path things take? What if that's the path things take? That's more in the anxiety worry category, I think, rather than the actual fear category. But I often find the mind will go into that kind of future scenario making. And one of the things I've seen about that is the mind thinks, okay, yes, if that's the way it goes, that's what I'll do. If that's the way it goes, then I'll do that. Or if that's the way it goes, then I'll do that. And it creates this belief or this idea that there's some kind of control over these imagined futures. In my imagination, there's perfect control. As the mind projects into, oh yes, that's what's going to happen, and that's how I'll respond. So there's perfect control. So that perfect control gives me a sense of, ah, I'm okay. Things feel okay. That's all happening in the mind. And what I've seen over and over again is that when I actually get to something that might approximate the situation, first of all, I almost never have imagined it to be exactly the way it is. So there's something else going on there. I've never had perfect premonition about what is going to come into being. And so all of those scenario makings were like a waste of time. But even if I come close, and it's like, yes, one of those imagined scenarios does happen, I often have seen, actually I've rarely seen that I've been able to respond in the way that I imagined myself to be able to respond. I've not been able to do that because there's other things happening in the present moment. And so one of the things that I've really begun to appreciate is that when my mind starts projecting out and starts thinking, well, what if, how, you know, thinks about how to control the future, what I've seen is that the best way that I can prepare myself for anything that will happen in the future is to be present now. Because if I'm present now, it will increase the likelihood that I'll be present, available, aware, mindful, able to bring my skillful means when the future comes. All of that thinking, the vast majority of it, a waste of time around that worry. The vast majority of it is a waste of time. And so when I see the mind starting to go there, I've had enough experience with it now that it's like, yep, that's a waste of time. Much better to just be present right here. And trust, in a way, it takes a sense of trust in in our capacity to meet just the unfolding of our lives. That's hard for us. It's hard for us to not know or to not have the sense, the thought that we know how things are going to unfold. We don't actually know how our lives are going to unfold. There's no way we can know how our lives are going to unfold. But we like to believe we know how our lives are going to unfold. So working with fear, I've been, you know, talking about some of the ways I explore it or just some of the wisdom that I've learned about it. I think the biggest thing, when you find that it's happening, as I just said a few minutes ago, one of the biggest things is coming into the body, noticing how is the body here and now. I find it's often much easier to actually be with the physical experience than it is with the mind's ideas about what might happen in the future. With a bit of that ability or that capacity to be with the physical experience, it gives us a little bit of a distance, too, from the way our mind is proliferating around the fear, all of those thoughts. And it gives us a little bit of a chance to look more rationally at those thoughts, as opposed to being hooked into them. You know, we get hooked into those thoughts, and it's like they're in charge. Those thoughts of what if, what's going to happen, how's it going to be? When we're hooked into those thoughts, it's like they are running the show. And when we can take a step back, turn our attention to the body, it gives us a little bit of distance or space between ourselves and those thoughts, and allows us to actually recognize, yeah, that those are just thoughts. And to perhaps bring in some reflection, you know, that this, I don't know how it's going to unfold. These constructions that I'm making are just constructions. So it allows us to bring in some of that wisdom. Sometimes I find bringing wisdom in like that is a very helpful way to work with fear. And you can bring in some understanding that you have from your own practice. I mean, you know, this is impermanent. The state of mind is impermanent. It's just a passing phenomenon. Or this is created by conditions. These thoughts are created by conditions. Maybe recognizing how some triggers came into play. And if you can see sometimes that, you know, like that example of, you know, walking down the street and seeing somebody who has a body shape similar to somebody who has mistreated you, you know, that you can recognize, yes, it's not that person. You know, consciously remind yourself, that was then, this is now. You know, bringing in some wisdom. So it can be very helpful to consciously bring in wisdom like this. Another really helpful thing around fear. Sometimes we find ourselves afraid of our fear or resistant to fear. And it's really helpful. I mean, so, you know, if you find yourself resistant to fear, like there's fear coming up and trying to pay attention to it. So this happens often in meditation, I think, you know, that we there's some kind of fear coming up and we think, okay, fear's coming up, I'm supposed to pay attention to that. And then maybe there's all this resistance. It's like, no, you know, I don't want to pay attention to that. No, I should pay attention to that. But there's this sense of kind of pushing away. It's really helpful if that kind of thing has happened to not push through the resistance, to try to meet the fear, to try to look at the fear, but be with what is actually happening, which is the resistance. So there's, oh, okay, so there's resistance. Resistance is happening. And maybe that resistance is actually bringing some kind of wisdom in. It may be that paying attention to that fear in that moment would be re-traumatizing. And that it's actually wisdom coming in to say, no, not now. So that's something to keep in mind when we look at difficult emotions, that sometimes when we feel resistance, if we're trying to pay attention to them, when we feel resistance, sometimes it's a wisdom that's saying, yeah, not now. So if you've got a kind of a sense of, yeah, not now, can you turn your attention to some other thing in your experience? Find some way to help yourself ground. Open your eyes. Go out into nature. Do something that will feel settling or grounding for you. So respecting that. There's also a sense, too, of respecting the fear itself, because sometimes what happens with fear, if we're not resisting it, sometimes we think, yeah, oh, there's fear. What am I afraid of? Well, I'm afraid of this, this thing. And so it's kind of like we push through to try to be with that thing. So one example, this actually happens in meditation sometimes. This is one of the ways that meditation can unfold. It's like almost a trajectory through our meditation that we start getting more and more aware of impermanence as we practice. And sometimes that awareness of impermanence becomes kind of unsettling. You know, we become aware, yeah, everything's changing. There's nothing. There's nowhere to land. Every time I put my attention on something, it's gone. And it can be a little disturbing. So if it feels like, you know, sometimes what happens in that kind of a situation, I've known people in meditation, it's like, well, there's the fear of this sense of things just dissolving or nothing to land on or kind of this ever-flowing dynamic situation that feels spinning out of control. Sometimes people think, well, then I need to be with all that impermanence. I need to be with that sense of things spinning out of control. But fear is what's happening. So to not push through the fear to be with what you're afraid of, but to recognize, respect the fear. I sometimes say that, respect the fear. It's telling you something. There's something to learn from it. So what is that experience of fear? How is it in the body? What kinds of thoughts does it produce? Can you see when it comes, what allows it to go away? Just noticing its conditioned nature. It's the way it comes and goes. So, you know, fear actually, I've been kind of saying this in different ways, but I'll make it more clear now. Certain kinds of fear are really pointers to truth, because much of the reason fear comes about is because life is out of our control. Because things are not permanent. You know, we fear losing things that we have. We will lose everything we have. We will. So fear is almost like it's a response. It's a misunderstood response to truth, often, I think, that we see impermanence and we're afraid. We see things being out of control and we're afraid. The fact that things are out of control is a truth. The fact that things are impermanent is a truth. And yet our minds have trouble wrapping themselves around that truth. Our minds have trouble surrendering to those truths. So we try to live our lives shoring up our little bit of permanence here and a little bit of control there and think that we've got things okay for a little while, and then that one falls apart a little bit, and then we shore it up over here a little bit. So we spend our lives trying to control the impermanence, control things that are essentially not controllable, feeling like that's where security is, that's where safety is, that's where non-fear is. That's what we think. And the Buddha actually said, you know, if we come into alignment with that truth, that's where true security is. That's where fearlessness comes, when we can come into alignment with that truth. I've seen this a few times in my own practice, once around, I'll tell you the whole story. I think I have enough time. It was right after the September 11th attacks, and I had been away from California and was staying with my parents when that happened, and I had a flight that was scheduled back, I think like on the 20th or something. The plane was delayed because of weather, and I had a stop over in Houston before coming back to California. And because my plane was delayed, I missed my flight to California, so I had to stay overnight in Houston. And staying overnight in Houston, I was in my hotel room, and the power went out in the hotel room. And I looked out the window, and it wasn't just the hotel. It was dark everywhere. There were no lights as far as I could see. And this was right after the September 11th attacks at George Bush International Airport. And my mind went nuts with this, you know, what kind of a, you know, statement would this be for terrorists to attack George Bush International Airport, you know? And so there was tremendous fear that arose in that situation. It was constructed, you know, nothing happened except the lights went out, but there was this tremendous fear. I mean, you know, I envisioned all these things about all of us gathering in the hallways, and I had to use my Indiglo watch to navigate my room because I couldn't see anything. So I envisioned us all in the hallway with our Indiglo watches. And so my mind created this huge thing. And at some point, it's like, wait a minute. Okay, this is all story. And I actually began to tap into what is one of the antidotes to metta, to fear, which is metta. So I began doing the metta practice. I began wishing for safety, for myself, for all beings. And actually, I found that to be really easy. And as I did that, the fear went away. And I felt a really tremendous sense of the heart being open, a sense of, yes, this is what I wish, is for all of us to be safe. And then the mind would construct some scenario again, and it would go off into the fear, and okay, wait a minute, come back. And I would come back to the metta. And in doing that back and forth a few times, I realized that the fear and the metta were coming back to the same place, the wish for safety, and that the metta was a more wholesome expression of that wish. The fear was a confused version of that wish. So it's interesting sometimes when we have fear, anxiety, worry, maybe to see what truth is being pointed to and what kind of wholesome quality might be resting in the middle, below the fear. Sometimes when we have strong, difficult emotions, we think they're all bad, you know. It's like, well, there's that fear. I've got to get rid of it. You know, kind of like I had envisioned myself excising that ball of fear, cutting it out with a scalpel and removing the whole thing. But in the middle of that whole process was this wish for safety, which was a wholesome wish. And connecting to that brought some ease, brought some freedom. There's also, I think, fear around not knowing. So I've talked about out of control, impermanence. There can be kind of a fear around the uncertainty of our lives. And again, this is a truth. It's true that we don't know what our next moment will be. Sometimes in meditation, we actually enter into the reality of that. At one point, I was on a 3-month retreat, and I entered into the reality that I didn't know what the very next split second was going to be like, and tremendous fear came up. And I was like, well, all right, let me meet this fear. What actually am I afraid of? And I saw that actually what I was afraid of was an idea that I didn't know. It was true that I didn't know, but what I was afraid of was the idea. And that when I was in the very moment, in the very present moment, there was always something happening to be known. It kind of felt like I was standing on the edge of a cliff, you know, the edge of an abyss. And what it felt like, I mean, the experience was like, I don't know what the next moment is going to be. It felt like I had to trust to step off the edge of that abyss. That's what it felt like. I was stepping into the unknown, stepping into nothing. And yet, I took that step, and where did I end up? Right on the edge of the abyss. It's kind of like the abyss grows with each step. There's always something next. We don't know what it is. And so this is a kind of a trust in a way. So we fear that unknown. And again, there's that sense of not being in alignment with reality, not being able to meet reality. And often we can't. And then we meet the fear. It's like, okay, I can't face the unknown right now, but fear, I'll look at the fear. That's what's happening. So, any thoughts, questions, comments? Yeah, 1, 2. Okay, go ahead.
You spoke so much truth to me. I find myself spiraling through these thoughts. And another teacher had shared something that... Oh, sorry, another teacher had shared something with me. You mentioned the word story a couple of times. In the same way that we weave this story of fear, of what we're afraid of, this unknown, we're going through basically a negative spiral.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And one of the things that what I realized is those stories that we're telling ourselves are just as much fantasy as the story that we could tell in a positive way.
Yes.
We're still, it's a construct that we're building. Why is it so easy for us to go through the negative path versus the positive path of what could be?
Well, some people go to the positive path. so it varies for different people which kind of direction we tend to go. But it is a, the positive path has its own downfalls as well.
Which is still fantasy.
Yes, it's fantasy.
It's still a construct that we're building.
It's a construct, and also it can set us up in a way. I mean, I my mind does both. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to be the best meditator here. You know, I'm going to be the greatest retreat person in the world. And then, like, 30 seconds later, my mind is all over the place. Just like, oh, I'm not the greatest meditator. I'm a failure. Oh, it's so awful. So, you know, the positive, or the so-called positive, is often trying to construct control also in its own way. Yeah. But yeah, it is the tendency of our mind. And so the exploration is, can we recognize, oh, that's happening. Story making is happening right now.
Right. That's exactly the point that I think you were leading to that. I think that's the point that I was trying to get to.
Yes.
Is it's recognizing that storytelling.
Yes, exactly.
And once you can recognize it, what I wanted to make sure I understood what you said is then one of the ways you recognize it and then come into the body.
That's a really helpful way. Stopping. Yes, that's a really helpful way to let go of that mental proliferation, because the body is right here. You know, that there's a real pull to the mental proliferation. You know, it's somehow very satisfying to us. But when we really begin to recognize what's happening there, you know, we are losing our lives in our story making. We are not aware of what's going on. Our habits are in control. And, you know, we're not present for what's actually unfolding. We're envisioning something unfolding at some other time, which may or may not happen. So, you know, to begin to recognize that, oh, that story, what's actually happening? What's happening here right now? And body is always present. So that's a really great place to come. You can also notice the moods, the feelings, the emotions that are present. Sometimes stories like that will generate feelings. You know, I've seen sometimes a proliferation into, I'm going to have such a great time being with those friends and blah, 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 you know, the mind going off into all that story. And I come back and recognize, and it's like, well, what's happening right now? I'm feeling a lot of love for those friends. You know, so that that story making created a wholesome emotion, but I wasn't noticing it. So that's something else we can check into is what emotion has been produced by. But often the emotion can be felt also in the body. Yeah. Thank you.
So lately I've had a very strong story kind of moving through my life that it's very upsetting to me. And I've spent a lot of time during meditation and really kind of throughout my days. I spent a couple of days where I meditated like multiple times, kind of for long periods of time, and really made an effort to set the story aside.
Uh-huh.
And I felt and feel a lot better, except now I feel like it's sort of lurking.
Uh-huh.
Like it still feels like it's real. It's just sort of like I put it outside the house, and now I can't leave the house.
Oh, I see. That's a great analogy. So one way to explore this would be, you know, if you've been setting it aside and turning to like the breath or something else entirely, that's a way of kind of like setting it outside the house. A kind of an intermediate might be kind of what I just pointed to. So there's the thoughts, there's the story. What are the feelings associated with that scenario? Is there confusion? Is there a depression? Is there what are the feelings associated with that? And see if you can be with the feelings rather than with the thoughts. It's almost like you could bring up the story for just a moment and then let yourself come into, and how does that feel? Because we can get some almost different information about what our relationship is to the story by feeling into how we are. We seem to think that the way to solve the problem or to deal with the situation is to think our way through it. And we've done a lot of that, and it can be helpful, and I've had success with that. And yet, there's a whole different area or domain from which we can gather information about how we are around that situation. And that's the emotions, the feelings associated with it. So that's kind of an intermediate. It's not so much setting it completely outside the house, but it's not engaging with the actual thoughts so much. Allowing that scenario to come up, and then what's the feeling? Seeing if you can keep letting go, and that the thought may come up again. Okay, let go of the thought. What are the feelings? Not try, come back to the breath. Not try, go to hearing, to ignore or to turn away from the feelings. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, does that sound like a kind of an intermediate path?
It does. I've experienced that with other things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you may find this one sounds like it's got a lot of stickiness to it.
It feels very, very real.
Yeah.
When I'm in it, it doesn't feel like, I'm thinking this and I'm upset.
It's the way it is.
And the way it is really painful and upsetting.
Right. So touch into the feeling. I mean, it may be that you need to just touch into the feelings for a moment and then go to something else so that you've got... so that you begin to move in that direction. But often, if you move in that direction, sometimes it's like going down the rabbit hole. So, touch in and then see if you can step aside and give yourself a little bit of a taste of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, maybe now that I have some distance, I can get...
You get a little bit, yeah, just...
Go a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just take like a little bite.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes we call it titration, It's like just a little bit of that, and then come back to something that I can be here with this. I can be with my breath. I can open my eyes and be with being in this room. Okay, let me close my eyes. Oh, there it is again. Okay, be with that. Oh, open my eyes again. So just, going back and forth like that can be really helpful.
Thank you.
So we need to stop. Thank you all.